the inevitable conflict. The coordinator in his private study had that medieval curiosity, a fireplace. To be sure, the medieval man might not have recognized it as such, since it had no functional significance. The quiet, licking flame lay in an insulated recess behind clear quartz. The logs were ignited at long distance through a trifling diversion of the energy beam that fed the public buildings of the city. The same button that controlled the ignition first dumped the ashes of the previous fire and allowed for the entrance of fresh wood. It was a thoroughly domesticated fireplace, you see. But the fire itself was real. It was wired for sound so that you could hear the crackle, and, of course, you could watch it leap in the airstream that fed it. The coordinator's ruddy glass reflected, in miniature, the discreet gamboling of the flame, and in even further miniature, it was reflected in each of his brooding pupils. And in the frosty pupils of his guest, Dr. Susan Calvin of U.S. Robots and Mechanical Men Corporation. The coordinator said, "I did not ask you here entirely for social purposes, Susan." "I did not think you did, Stephen," she replied. "And yet I don't quite know how to phrase my problem. On the one hand, it can be nothing at all. On the other, it can mean the end of humanity. I have come across so many problems, Stephen, that presented the same alternative. I think all problems do." "Really? Then judge this. World Steel reports an overproduction of 20,000 long tons. The Mexican canal is 2 months behind schedule. The mercury mines at Almaden have experienced a production deficiency since last spring, while the hydroponics plant at Tientsin has been laying men off. These items happen to come to mind at the moment. There is more of the same sort. Are these things serious? I'm not economist enough to trace the fearful consequences of such things. In themselves, they are not serious. Mining experts can be sent to Almaden if the situation were to get worse. Hydroponics engineers can be used in Java or in Ceylon if there are too many at Tientsin. 20,000 long tons of steel won't fill more than a few days of world demand, and the opening of the Mexican canal 2 months later than the planned date is of little moment. It's the machines that worry me. I've spoken to your director of research about them already." "To Vincent Silver?" "He hasn't mentioned anything about it to me." "I asked him to speak to no one. Apparently he hasn't."
"And what did he tell you?"
"Let me put that item in its proper place. I want to talk about the machines first. And I want to talk about them to you because you're the only one in the world who understands robots well enough to help me now. May I grow philosophical?"
"For this evening, Stephen, you may talk how you please and of what you please, provided you tell me first what you intend to prove."
"That such small unbalances in the perfection of our system of supply and demand, as I have mentioned, may be the first step towards the final war."
Proceed."
Susan Calvin did not allow herself to relax, despite the designed comfort of the chair she sat in. Her cold, thin-lipped face and her flat, even voice were becoming accentuated with the years. And although Stephen Byerly was one man she could like and trust, she was almost 70, and the cultivated habits of a lifetime are not easily broken.
"Every period of human development, Susan," said the coordinator, "has had its own particular type of human conflict, its own variety of problem that apparently could be settled only by force. And each time, frustratingly enough, force never really settled the problem. Instead, it persisted through a series of conflicts, then vanished of itself. What's the expression? Yes, not with a bang, but a whimper, as the economic and social environment changed. And then new problems, and a new series of wars. Apparently endlessly cyclic. Consider relatively modern times. There were the series of dynastic wars in the 16th to 18th centuries, when the most important question in Europe was whether the houses of Habsburg or Valois-Bourbon were to rule the continent. It was one of those inevitable conflicts, since Europe could obviously not exist, half one and half the other. Except that it did, and no war ever wiped out the one and established the other, until the rise of a new social atmosphere in France in 1789 tumbled first the Bourbons and eventually the Habsburgs down the dusty chute to history's incinerator. And in those same centuries there were the more barbarous religious wars, which revolved about the important question of whether Europe was to be Catholic or Protestant. Half and half she could not be. It was inevitable that the sword decide. Except that it didn't. In England, a new industrialism was growing, and on the continent, a new nationalism. Half and half Europe remains to this day, and no one cares much. In the 19th and 20th centuries, there was a cycle of nationalist-imperialist wars, when the most important question in the world was which portions of Europe would control the economic resources and consuming capacity of which portions of non-Europe. All non-Europe obviously could not exist, part English and part French and part German and so on, until the forces of nationalism spread sufficiently so that non-Europe ended what all the wars could not and decided it could exist quite comfortably all non-European. And so we have a pattern. Yes, Stephen, you make it plain, said Susan Calvin. These are not very profound observations.
No. But then it is the obvious which is so difficult to see most of the time. People say it's as plain as the nose on your face. But how much of the nose on your face can you see unless someone holds a mirror up to you? In the 20th century, Susan, we started a new cycle of wars. What shall I call them? Ideological wars? The emotions of religion applied to economic systems rather than to extra-natural ones. Again, the wars were inevitable, and this time there were atomic weapons, so that mankind could no longer live through its torment to the inevitable wasting away of inevitability. And positronic robots came. They came in time, and with it, and alongside it, interplanetary travel, so that it no longer seemed so important whether the world was Adam Smith or Karl Marx. Neither made very much sense under the new circumstances. Both had to adapt, and they ended in almost the same place. A deus ex machina, then, in a double sense, said Dr. Calvin dryly. The coordinator smiled gently. I have never heard you pun before, Susan. But you are correct. And yet, there was another danger. The ending of every other problem had merely given birth to another.